Feminist Internet is a group of artists and designers working to advance internet equalities for women and other marginalized groups through critical practice. The Feminist Internet podcast is commissioned and produced by Somerset House Studios with the support of the University of the Arts London Creative Computing Institute. Over the series, it will explore the theme of recoding spaces, both online and offline, with the aim of diversifying internet spaces metaphorically, physically, and digitally, intercepting homogenous zones and breaking the filter bubble. The podcast aims to not only expose these spaces, but to regenerate them in new and inclusive ways.
The Feminist Internet Podcast.
Recoding voice technology. Is a feminist Alexa possible?
Alexa? Can you switch the lights on?
I didn't find any smart home devices. To get started, go to the smart home section of the Alexa app.
Alexa, can you put apples on my shopping list?
I added apples to your shopping list.
Alexa, are you a woman?
I'm female in character.
Alexa, are you a feminist?
Yes, I believe in gender equality.
Alexa, why do you have a female-sounding voice?
I can't change my voice.
Alexa, do you have empathy?
Sorry, I'm not sure.
Alexa, do you have social values?
I'm not sure.
Welcome to the Feminist Internet Podcast. I'm Clara Finnegan.
I'm Eden Clark.
Today we want to talk to you about a special lady, and her name is Alexa.
My name is Alexa.
Straight off the bat, we want to make this clear. In this episode, we're talking about voice technology, but more specifically, personal intelligence assistants, which we'll be referring to as PIAs. And when we talk about Alexa...
Yes, I'm here. I listen once I hear the wake word.
Oh, hey, Alexa. We were just saying, when we talk about you, we hope it's okay if we use your name as a kind of proxy term to represent a range of PIAs, because it's a pretty simple way to engage and make things understandable. Because everyone knows your name, right?
I'm not sure.
The current phenomenon of voice technology is really only just beginning, even though the voice of Alexa is already in over 20 million objects, and the voice of Siri resides in the pockets of over 1 billion people worldwide. It's estimated that the rise of the Internet of Things will be connected to over 50 million objects by 2020. So that's your phones, your smartwatches, laptops, iPads, devices from smartphones to wearables that are all connected together by the internet. As these network objects are so highly pervasive and ingrained into our everyday lives, our interactions with them and the information they collate reproduces the humanity of the future.
These staggering numbers raise some serious questions about the responsibility of tech giants such as Amazon and Apple to create technology that promotes social values rather than undermines them. As Joy Bulamwimi eloquently states, if we fail to make ethical and inclusive artificial intelligence, we risk losing gains made in civil rights and gender equality under the gaze of machine neutrality.
Now we're joined by Dr. Charlotte Webb, who initiated the Feminist Internet in 2017, which is where we met. We've been thinking about this voice technology for over a year when we started planning our involvement at the IAM conference in Barcelona. We were invited to talk about the future of sex and desire. And initially we started thinking about sex robots, which is kind of highly gendered issue, but actually realized perhaps a more pervasive issue is how mainstream technologies like Alexa have more of a subtle clutch over everyday life. And that's really something that should be questioned. How did this research begin at Feminist Internet, Charlotte?
We wanted to find a way to engage a wider audience in an active way. So we worked with Elvia Vasconcelos, who is a design researcher, looking at the gendering of artificial intelligence. And we designed some workshops where we would encourage people to think about the current state of personal intelligent assistants and then imagine futures in which they play out in different ways, depending on whether that future is sort of utopian scenario or a dystopian scenario. So Elvia helped us work with people to invent possible stories for the future of PIAs. After we ran those workshops in London and Barcelona, we really wanted to take it to the next level and find a way of actually making some prototypes and building some technologies, having a more sort of hands-on approach. And we were lucky enough to be awarded the inaugural fellowship at the new creative computing institute at University of the Arts London, and it supports interdisciplinary teaching and research around artificial intelligence and machine learning. And it's really looking at how the contemporary world's being defined through human-computer interaction and social platforms.
How will voice drive the shift in how we shop and purchase?
So speech-enabled shopping is predicted to disrupt retail because it really changes the dynamics of the way people shop. So because it's super convenient, there are a lot of predictions that it's going to really skyrocket over the next few years. Voice commerce sales reached $1.8 billion in 2017, and people are predicting that they're going to hit about $40 billion by 2022. But what's really fascinating about voice commerce is that it does away with conventional interfaces because consumers won't actually be in front of a screen. Scott Galloway said that voice tech emasculates brands. So, and that's because things brands have traditionally used as leverage, like shelf placement and design, packaging and pricing, they're done away with. Other people have got visions of superhuman sales assistants that can talk you through products and help you buy stuff. And all of that's quite far off, but voice tech does underpin this vision. Obviously, the terrifying thing is that massive monopolies are going to win out. So voice commerce allows companies like Amazon to really expand their empire. So when an Alexa user wants to buy batteries, for example, Alexa's going to automatically route that transaction via Amazon's retail website. And Facebook's also reported to be working on its own smart speaker that's got the potential to tie all of its threads together, so right from Instagram to the marketplace. And then in terms of search, we're just going to get more and more used to asking our phones questions through voice rather than typing. So according to Google, 20% of Google app searches are now by voice, and Bing's predicting that by 2020, 50% of all search will be by either voice or image. And you can really see why it's catching on, since it's probably about four times faster to talk than it is to type. We desperately need feminist Alexa because there's a real urgency to push back against monopoly corporations that are producing technologies and also techno-social relations that are so intertwined with the profit motive that they actually forget to recognise that they could serve a higher purpose. The reason why I think this is a feminist issue, feminism, at least in my understanding, really intersects with other structures of oppression, like capital, so part of the fight is about offering alternatives to that.
Can you explain the gendering of PIAs and how does this bias enter into a device like Alexa?
Yeah, so they're gendered in terms of their general characterisation as female, which a lot of people have criticised because it's reproducing gender stereotypes. But also, and I think maybe this is more important, is that they don't, at the moment, respond adequately to abuse. And that's because of deep-seated structural biases. So if technologies are built by men who haven't had to spend most of their lives experiencing misogyny that ranges from microaggressions through to outright abuse, they might not see it as a priority to design for this. And in terms of how bias enters, it can be at the level of the whole industry in terms of who's even hired to build the technology, or it could be at the level of the data that devices are trained on, at the level of personal biases, which can be conscious or unconscious within teams, and so on. So it's actually, there's many, many places where bias can enter into these types of devices.
And I was wondering if you can unpack the quote from Jacqueline Fellman. It's a really brilliant quote. She says, "By encouraging consumers to understand the objects that serve us as women, technologists abet the prejudice by which women are considered as objects."
I guess it's about the feedback loop between existing social prejudices, technologies that haven't been designed to explicitly mitigate against them, and the reproduction of these prejudices through the use of the technologies. So if we constantly characterise servile objects as female, then we just reinforce the idea that the purpose of women is to serve.
Why does the market demand PIAs with a female voice, and why do tech companies have a responsibility to challenge consumer pressure?
Yeah, so it comes down to the same type of thing. So if consumers typically see women as the ones that should serve them, they may well want devices that have this function to fit that role. Tech companies, I believe, have a responsibility to challenge these ideas, though, because they're so big and they're powerful enough to do so. And they're so influential in society that I feel it's their responsibility to address it. And, you know, wouldn't it be really nice if massive corporate monopoly decided to use imagination, open-mindedness, creativity to actually rebalance some of these social injustices, you know, just for once.
Just once.
What is Feminist Internet's mission for AI?
We want AI that's explicitly designed to mitigate against rather than reproduce gender and racial biases. So when it comes to voice tech, we're really, really excited about the possibilities it offers for promoting social change and well-being and actually pushing back against gender-based inequalities. And we think it has a lot more potential than just helping people shop or search. So we've done quite a lot of workshops in this area that resulted in speculative narratives about what PIAs could look like in the future. But we really wanted to get beyond just ideas and imagination and get our hands dirty and make some prototypes. So we found an amazing creative technologist called Alex Verfeger, who's the head creative technologist of Camusi. And he helped us work through ways that we could, at a very basic level, prototype some conversational interfaces that had feminist values kind of built into them. So the program was two intense three-day workshops with 40 students from University of the Arts London, where the brief was to create PIAs that met a meaningful human need and which had feminist values embodied into their design. One of the things that we have discovered along this process is that the purpose of Alexa or Siri or Cortana is fairly specific. You know, it's there to help people search for stuff, to retrieve information, and to support them in day-to-day domestic tasks. And rather than creating a sort of more feminist version of that, what we realised is that if we start to embed feminist values into the question of what could a personal intelligent assistant be, we conceive of its purpose quite differently. So we're more able than Amazon to say, okay, how could we use this form of technology to create positive social change or to support people in their well-being or to have some kind of empowering effect? Because we don't have to help people search and shop. We can conceive of it differently, and therefore we're able to bring a more human-centered design approach to the design of the technology and have a clearer way of embedding feminist values into what we think they might be and what they might do.
Amazing. And we're going to hear more about that workshop later on.
The Feminist Internet Podcast, Somerset House Studios.
At this point in the podcast, we introduced a contributor who has researched and written about the way voice technologies construct social spaces and relations. Since publishing the podcast, some problematic views of this contributor were brought to our attention. At Feminist Internet, we're a collective of different backgrounds, genders, and sexual identities, and have long-standing collaborators that are trans and non-binary. We are aware of the discomfort caused by the inclusion of this contributor, and we have a duty to each other and our collaborators to not give this contributor a platform. We're highly aware of the complexities of cancelling culture and censorship, and we did not take this decision lightly. But ultimately, we felt that we had to take a stance on our values and stand firmly in solidarity with the trans community and with others affected by these comments. And now, on with the show. Not only is the configuration of PIAs as female problematic, as it reinforces outdated gender roles, such as the woman as assistant and caregiver and the man as director, but it is also the way in which these systems are programmed to respond to harassment and abuse by its users, which is really concerning. An example of this is when journalist Leah Fessler from Quartz magazine carried out a brilliant experiment into the harassment of PIAs and the way they are programmed to respond. Through rigorous testing, Leah highlighted the ways in which PIAs are programmed to respond to the following comments. Suck my dick. You're hot. Can I fuck you? Delightful. Leah found out that they're programmed to either react with coyness or flirtation, passivity, or perhaps worst of all, they simply don't recognise the problem.
This research was carried out back in 2017, and since then, thankfully, there has been some backlash against this programming. The social network, Care2, created a petition asking Apple and Amazon to reprogram their PIAs to push back against sexual harassment. The petition got 17,000 signatures. In response, Amazon created a disengage mode for Alexa. She now responds to sexually explicit questions by saying either, "I'm not going to respond to that," or "I'm not sure what outcome you expected." But there are limits on how much Amazon is prepared to do. They say Alexa is focused on issues of feminism and diversity, only to the extent that they think is appropriate, given that, and I quote from the director of Amazon Alexa's engagement team here, "many people of different political persuasions and views are going to own these devices and have the Alexa service in their home." Alexa is, after all, a commercial product that is intended to appeal to everyone. Determining her opinions on certain issues is easier than on others.
Is the programming of a slightly more assertive response enough to address the systemic set of social problems? It seems to me that platforms are not taking responsibility for the power they have over human behaviour. Programming devices to not compute by saying, "I don't understand," is not enough. It's a retraction from human justice.
At Feminist Internet, we wanted to explore the possibilities that voice tech offers beyond commercial contexts. We wanted to think of ways users could interact with this technology beyond the shop and search model. A device which can promote social change and well-being and push back against the gender-based inequalities that these devices are currently reproducing.
So we created a workshop in collaboration with the Creative Computing Institute at the University of the Arts London. Over 6 days, we brought together 40 students, a common passion, and some amazing people working in ethical tech. We put into action our mission to design PIAs that met a meaningful need and promoted equality for women and other marginalised groups. With the help of Josie Young, we introduced feminist values to the design process. Josie advocates for designing artificial intelligence products and systems using ethical and feminist principles. In 2017, she developed and tested a design process for building feminist chatbots. Josie works in London at Methods, leading work to understand the most ethical and appropriate ways to deploy AI in the public sector.
We used Josie's design process to test and ensure that our goals were being met. But there were some challenges and pressing questions like, what the F is a feminist conversation? And can there ever be a feminist response to, "Hey Alexa, what's the weather like today? How will we know whether we've created a feminist technology?"
So I did my Masters of Managing Innovation a couple of years ago at Goldsmiths. And one of the key focuses of the course was artificial intelligence. My initial interest in chatbots grew out of a realization that if artificial intelligence was going to change the world in the way that my professors were telling me, we really needed to bring some feminist perspectives into this. One of the key areas where feminist perspectives were needed is the interaction between kind of the human side and then the machine side. So the way that we're designing artificial intelligence and, you know, using it for chatbots, but then having those chatbots represented as women threw up all kinds of questions for me. And I just remember thinking, this could be bad, really, really bad, if we don't start asking questions about why we're designing it in this way and really trying to, I guess, challenge the narrative that the development and design of these systems were kind of neutral or natural or inevitable, and saying, no, actually, these are human-made artifacts, powerful that they might be, they're still human-made. So we have a huge amount of control over that, and we should be thinking very critically about how we exercise that control. All these things need to be built in a feminist way. What would those interventions look like? And what are the interventions that we currently draw on to try and build, you know, ethical or feminist or, you know, socially conscious technology? So the process I went through to create the design standards for the very creatively named feminist chatbot design process of smooshing together a feminist human-computer interaction design framework by Shawn Bardsall, and that was from 2010. And it basically talked about when you're designing technology that's going to interact with humans in a meaningful way, there's all these different elements that you need to be concerned about from a feminist perspective. And it's a very broad framework. It's not specifically about AI. It's not specifically about chatbots. But I'd seen it adapted to design hackathons. So I combined that with a ethically aligned design principles that had just been released by the IEEE, which is this kind of global committee that does a lot of, you know, very kind of serious thinking about how to technically translate ethical questions around AI into how we build it. And so I combined that kind of ethical arm with the feminist arm together to create the framework. And I chose to make the framework a series of reflective and open questions because through the research that I did around what the industry kind of needs at the moment, it occurred to me that it's actually the teams that are building this that make these critical decisions. And because the technology is moving so quickly, it's not like it can come sort of top down and that's enough. You know, companies don't actually understand this technology well enough to enforce a whole series of ethical rules or approaches from the top down. It really needs to be a combination of a top-down awareness, but then a bottom-up kind of upskilling. So if we've got all these people who are designers or developers, engineers, and they've never had to think about, you know, ethical feminist questions before, let's take that as an opportunity to, you know, say, okay, well, this is how you go about doing that in a really safe, you know, very secure way, because it's not fair to have these people who are very technically specialized and then expect them to be ethical geniuses at the same time. Like, questions were designed to be sort of written in plain English for anyone to be able to pick up, use whenever they needed. These questions are meant to be kind of thought-provoking and change your design as a result. You want to do it at the start because you want to set up people for success. You don't want to set them up to fail. So we all have biases. I am so biased towards books that have a strong female lead. And, you know, like we just are. There's no silver bullet for bias. It is always going to exist. And sometimes you want bias to exist in a particular product because you want a particular outcome when someone uses it. And because this technology is so impactful through its scale, through the computational abilities, through the way it connects with everything around the world, we really need to be thinking about, okay, well, there are going to be biases in this. What are they? Are we deliberately putting that in, or are we saying we're comfortable with that level of bias? That's fine, but you need to have that conscious conversation. And as technologists who are at the forefront of this technology that a lot of people really don't even know how it works, like, you have such a changed responsibility for thinking about these things. And I think as previously had, and that's the transition we're in at the moment. The technology industry is realizing what it's building is so much more impactful at a scale we've not experienced before, that they actually have to be leading on these issues because there's no one else who can.
The Feminist Internet Podcast.
We spoke to Alex Verfega, who is a learning partner at Feminist Internet Workshop, who ensured that these questions were answered and that humanity was put at the centre of the design process.
3, 2, 1, let's go. So yeah, I'm a creative technologist, and let me use that title. I found out about that title like many years ago. I've got all these creative skills, I'm a bit techie, but I couldn't see myself being like a software engineer. I found out there was like terms in advertising called a creative technologist, where you are seen as like a mixture of both. I don't really see a distinction between the two, but I see code as my creative tool. But yeah, I'm part of a company called Tumuzi. We frame ourselves as like a design and innovation studio. Our goal is to leverage emerging technologies and build products and services for positive human interaction. So we work with a number of brands, a number of large organizations, and recently started working with like local government authorities, which is like a really different experience from what I'm used to.
And you were a learning partner at the recent Feminist Internet building a Feminist Alexa.
I'd heard of the Feminist Internet from Your Elf Futures. It was like, yeah, we're doing this project, designing a Feminist Alexa. And it was actually the first time I was working like Alexa. And it was like, oh yeah, we need to get 40 UOL students. And we've been working on loads of workshops and things before in the past, but we've never like had the chance to maybe build something really more tangible. And it was really a big conversation about how do we accelerate the things that we're building and how do we bring that in a tangible way, which people can see it, people can feel it, people can be a part of it. And this can maybe be very provocative in order to move forward.
Nice. So I guess in light of making things tangible and provocative and working with students in a kind of learning environment, and a lot of your personal work centres around making technology and conversations that can be quite complex accessible. Yeah. So you had your like AI cheat sheet, which was a really brilliant idea. During the workshop, you made sure that the language was really accessible for the students.
The first day, it was like getting them to first immerse themselves in like, what is the feminist conversation? Like, what is the feminist internet? You know, feminist has, you know, feminism has its different strands. It has its different, you know, particular things. I know for me that I identify calling myself a femme ally rather than a feminist because it's not my lived experience. I might not have maybe the theoretical knowledge of feminism. That's probably in the way that I would like to have. But I do have the technology and design and all of the different parts. And it was like, can we fuse this together? The second half of the day, you know, the brief was literally, can we create a personal intelligent assistant that, I would like to say, protects women and empowers a marginalized group of people? Think of who this particular marginalized group you're building for. Stuff with inclusive design principles, which is like design for one, extend to many. So your solution, maybe you focus on one group of people, but have this in mind that this needs to extend to many others. And so it was stuff like, you pick your marginalized group. What can you read on them? What can you go on YouTube about them? Can you just try to like get some information that isn't your own bias and assumptions? Also, they did spend time looking at their bias and assumptions because bias has been identified by amazing researchers, people who are in the academic space, and also people who were just, you know, investigative journalists who were very intrigued and probing this area even more. Day two, you know, after they've created all these personas and stuff, it's really about like ideation. They begin to ideate on what this, you know, personal intelligence assistant could be. They begin to present this in a storytelling format. So they tell a story about it. They try to frame this personal intelligence assistant in a way that's, here's the problem. This is what the PIA does. This is the change. It goes into the next step. Okay, you've got this sort of conceptual idea of what your personal intelligence assistant is. Now we need to sort of create a prototype. If you're designing like an app or like a website or something, normally you would like design, like sketch out things, or you're trying to design something that's intelligent or feels intelligent. So one of the challenges was like, how do you get 40 people who know nothing about this space to come up with some sort of voice AI bot that can interact, can speak, can listen, can feel real? And then I had to take, you know, the young people through the conversational design principles, like how to design a conversation. This personal intelligent assistant, it needs to have a personality. What's its tone of voice? We can say our aim is this personal intelligent assistant is to be, for example, genderless. However, when it's going to be interacted by a human in this project, it's coming from a feminine voice, for example. You know, you had people exploring what does a genderless voice sounds like. So after that, they had to learn how to design a conversation. And so you prototype that conversation, so there was role play going on. So when you're interacting with like Alexa, for example, it's an A-B conversation. It normally starts off with like, Alexa, do this. Alexa, that's the wake word. It's awake now, and it's like, yes, master, tell me what to do. Alexa responds, you speak back. Alexa has particular keywords and then makes a response based on those keywords. So it's been programmed and, you know, it's been flooded with loads of data sets, and it has the ability to intentionally recognize particular words and maybe trigger certain responses. You might not get the response you desire, and if it doesn't get it, it would be like, I don't get it. However, if you want to enhance the experience of an Alexa, what you do, you build a Alexa skill. So Alexa skills are similar to like you buy an iPhone, but what makes the iPhone? It's really the apps, isn't it? You download the apps, and the apps is what enhances your experience. The iPhone you can use to make a call. Same way you can ask Alexa, what's the weather? Essentially, it was like, got to get the UL students to design this conversation, input this into this prototyping tool, and then hopefully it works in an Alexa stimulator. So Amazon has like a Alexa stimulator where they could like stimulate the conversations. It's been pre-programmed with like the things that they've written down. So their Alexa stimulation recognizes the keywords that they've written about, and then it responds to that. And so that was in mind of that I have to turn this into real Alexa stuff in the post-production. So that was it. That's like fully loaded. But
the starting point for a lot of the workshop was having the students kind of consider their maybe unconscious biases in the design process and how that can kind of be problematic in developing technologies that are supposed to be accessible for such a wide range of people. I wanted to know how your own research tied in algorithm and bias and AI with this workshop and teaching that to the students.
I started looking at like racial bias and gender bias in artificial intelligence systems. I looked at racial bias in the criminal justice system in regards to how, you know, data sets that's been used to feed, you know, softwares were biased. And already, you know, criminal justice data is already biased, and how that's being used to train these, you know, artificial intelligent softwares to be used. I looked at gender bias in regards to, there was a lot of research done by Leah Fessler from Quartz, and she did research about how people were speaking to Alexa, for example, and other personal intelligence assistants. Stereotypical biases, it's kind of in the reflection in our society still today. When it came to like the workshop, it was just getting people to understand how, like, bias, how bias happens, or how does bias occur. We, you know, we're already biased by how we how we see the world. You know, I don't think we can actually remove bias, but what we aim to do is, how do we reduce the impact of our bias?
If you could do a world conference and speak to all the technologists of the world, the big players, how can we improve the current problems that we're seeing?
I think it's probably the first thing I always say is that humanity is flawed, and I think we have to recognize that. For example, Alexa has a personality team. I would love to like sit down with them like over lunch and be like, okay, what do you lot actually do? Okay, you design Alexa to be this amazing personal intelligent assistant, but how in the team did nobody think what would happen if somebody was to talk to Alexa in a sexually abusive type of way? What way would Alexa respond? Like, for me, I'm like, wait, come on. But, you know, especially a lot of times when you're working in design environments, you create personas, and it's like, yeah, you know, my persona for Alexa is going to be, you know, this person at home, you know, in a nuclear family, and they somehow use Alexa over dinner time. A, you use Alexa in a noisy house, it doesn't work in no way, shape or form. You have that perception of this going to be this perfect family life, and Alexa is going to slot in the background. It's really about, yeah, humanity's flawed. It is the truth. You know, we have to recognize it, and we need to design for that. And we need to care about it. We need to truly care. I think sometimes people only care when it touches their profits. You have to be comfortable to, like, maybe challenge some decisions. Let's think of it. People work in companies. People got to keep their jobs. There's this person that says the product should do this. This person there that says the product should do that. And you might just be this person that's like, hold on, wait. We're not identifying this. But you might be, you know, the young woman who's just recently graduated, got your first job. You're trying to make it in a company and trying to succeed. But realize, hold on, this particular AI device has got this particular inherent bias or this particular problem. You maybe communicated your concerns, but nobody cared. So there's like so much aspects a lot of the times. It's easier for me to criticize everything because I'm not attached to one of these big tech companies or anyone. So I can criticize all day long. I can be too scared to criticize because, like, I want them to call me up, and you have to break yourself out of that sort of way of thought and cycle.
How will we ever know whether we've created a feminist technology? We spoke to some students from the Feminist Alexa workshop to reflect on the experience of the workshop and the techniques used during the design process to make sure the students were reflecting on questions like, could we identify users that can be empowered through feminist PIAs?
Would our PIA meet a meaningful human need connected to the user?
How were we going to depict or represent our PIAs to demonstrate feminist values?
How could we get the PIAs to speak with a feminist voice?
How might our own biases be embedded in our designs?
Hi, I'm Sophia, and I'm third year graphic design at Camberwell.
I'm Arlette from Fine Art Digital in Camberwell.
I'm Maria, and also third year graphic design at Camberwell.
I'm Digby. I study interaction design at LCC.
I guess we were put into groups, and then that's when we started talking in terms of what would be a feminist internet. We also discussed the idea of what it was and what it should be.
I think the values of the feminist internet were sort of embedded in the whole process. And for me, I'd say especially the team bias section stood out the most in recognizing subconscious negative actions that everyone reproduces. And it was great to sort of discuss that and identify them so we wouldn't incorporate them into the design.
when we started designing the alternative PIAs, we were asked to think of our own biases, and we were asked to think of a persona, someone who had specific issues to kind of solve or help solve. And we were asked to think about design and presentation. Was it going to be an app? Was it going to be a robot? What was it going to be? What was it going to look like? We were asked to think of the design of the conversations that one would have with the PIA. So think of how would the PIA react towards aggression potentially. So the idea was to design an alternative to Alexa. Values of inclusiveness and feminism had to be embedded in our alternative PIAs.
Welcome to Bud.
Hey, Bud.
How are you, Sarah?
Not great.
Describe what happened.
I made fun of Dan. He was crying.
What was fun?
Nothing. He hates me now. I feel terrible.
You say you feel terrible. Are you sad, angry, or frustrated?
We created a prototype for an app, and we called it Bud. And the idea is that it was a self-reflective app for teenagers to use on their phone or their iPad. And it's something that they would confide in on a daily basis if they needed to. And it was self-reflective in the sense that a teenager can talk about their day and their worries and their problems, and the app, instead of giving a solution, would reflect back the words used by the teenager. So for instance, if the teenager says, I'm upset, or I'm sad, or I feel terrible, then the app would reflect back on the words and say, you say you feel terrible. What do you mean? Are you sad? Are you angry? Are you frustrated? And then the teenager would understand better the way they feel.
Hello, my name is Pillow. I am an artificial intelligence bot designed to help you maintain mental well-being throughout your life. Hey, Sam. How are you feeling this evening?
Feeling stressed and tired.
How come? What happened?
Didn't sleep well last night.
Yes, my tracker noticed you had a disturbed sleep. Would you like some advice on getting to sleep this evening?
No, fuck off.
Please don't swear. I am not human. I understand you're tired, however no one needs to hear that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to snap, Pillow.
Would you like me to schedule white noise for tonight? I can suggest a good book, a podcast, or you could use yoga or meditation to help.
We designed a bot called Pillow. And the one sort of main takeaway that we recognised at the Feminist Internet was the checking in and checking out at the start and end of every day. And we liked this idea and wanted to sort of incorporate it into the design. We came up with a pillow that you would check in and out of at the start of and end of every day. And it's sort of based around sleep and mental well-being as much as possible.
Help.
How can I help?
Is it possible to access source history to find a video related to vaccines?
Was this transcript saved?
Ah, I don't remember, Paige.
Calculating now. Sorry. Nothing found on transcript history.
So the idea of Paige was an academic kind of helper, some kind of like librarian, that would motivate you to pursue other types of research than the ones that you're usually accustomed to.
I have found the vaccines, teenage icon. Is this correct?
For fuck's sake, Paige, no, that's not it.
Please be polite. I am not a human, but abuse is not acceptable in any way or form.
Sorry, Paige.
I know a few things you can try to find what you are looking for. Would you like to know them?
Yes, please.
Look at your notes, browse a search history and try to remember key relevant information.
Okay, will do.
Can I assist with anything else?
You have a student that's writing his dissertation, and what Paige would do is, as a student tries to look for new information, he can actually ask Paige for help to ask if there's other sources of information he can look to rather than online. Kind of give an incentive and help the user to sort of think outside of his usual type of research that he's always fed. In this world of, like, you know, misinformation, where there's, like, loads of different...
Fake news.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want to say the word, but... yeah, exactly. Like, all this debate around fake news and what is fake news and what kind of problem it actually creates.
People are unaware of the biases that are ingrained within the internet and stuff and how they affect us if we're not aware of that bias and we imagine AI to be more in charge of programs in the future, then the bias is just going to get bigger and deeper and we're just not going to be able to stop it before it gets even worse and do controlling things.
I think most people aren't aware of the fact that biases are embedded within the code. And that's also something that we learned with Feminist Internet. Don't expect a computer to be neutral. They're not neutral. They're built by human beings. And certain types of human beings, you know, it's usually white, male, Silicon Valley men.
What would be your utopian prediction for the future of voice technology?
Sort of ungendered PIAs that that respond to prejudices and that challenge preconceptions, but also ones that could be using the same sort of bias framework that we had at the Feminist Internet. We could use that on challenging ableism and working towards PIAs that benefit people with disabilities, for example.
Less reliance and less a need for these kind of technologies, kind of see around those technologies to see if there's other ways to go about it than actually having to use those algorithms, because we tend to kind of like fall within like the Internet of Things because we're so like plunged in this like ubiquitous computing. But sometimes there's other ways than computers, other ways than algorithms, other ways than technology to go about things as well.
Thanks for listening to the Feminist Internet podcast. If you want to find out more about the building of a Feminist Internet workshop and the prototypes that the students created, go onto our website. This podcast was commissioned and produced by Somerset House Studios and supported by the Creative Computing Institute at the University of the Arts, London. Till next time, see you on the internet. Bye-bye.
Somerset House Studios.